This is tape recording number 5703C19ACC. A lecture by L. Ron Hubbard from the 17th Advanced Clinical Course, entitled Outline of a Modern Intensive. Copyright by L. Ron Hubbard, 1957, with all world rights reserved. 16th Lecture of the 17th ACC, March 19, 1957. Consider an intensive in an earlier lecture, which was mainly theory. Now, the lecture I'm giving you now is just technique and commands, what I consider an intensive as of this time and date. You must be aware of the fact that a considerable amount of experimentation, research, and very close observation of cases goes on. And this brings about variations in procedures, changes of opinion on this and that. Any time there can be a change of opinion on anything, you must be aware of the fact that not all is known about it. Now, for instance, the reason we have so many art critics, so many opinions in art, is that nobody knows anything about art. We take that subject about which there is the greatest amount of authority and opinion, and you will have at once the subject about which the least is known. Now, we're in a much happier state than that. We do know quite a bit today about the mind and human beings, and that's the first time man has been in that sort of a condition. Before this, he sort of handled things instinctively. He couldn't really explain what he was on a sort of an unconscious, this is the proper response, sort of a thing, I hope. But many schools, beginning perhaps with the Chaldean priest teaching their young neophytes, the Asclepian school of Greece, the early activities of Christianity, has been the entirety of the Buddhist school and its school outfit, the Lama school. That's the schools of the Buddhist school, by the way. Now, you should read all about the demons and devils and so forth, the Tibetan. When I was a kid, I ran into these things head on. I didn't get nightmares, but I was living all day long in nightmares. Activities, and we find none of them have survived effectively. Each one has dwindled to a very marked degree. And to each one of these things, we owe a considerable amount of what we do know today. Each one of them has come up with a little bit of something and has then gone on with it. For instance, the Mu plus ultra technique and technology of superstition was developed by the Chaldeans. How to use signs and portents in the control of populaces. On this, he was the last expert. Eisenhower down here is hardly a case in point, but I mean, a good president, a good politician, the best we've ever had, could have gone to school all his life through the Chaldean priest and never had begun to exhaust their ability to control populaces. We owe almost the whole subject of astronomy, for instance, to the Chaldean priest, simply because he studied it to use it as a control mechanism on the population. He knew when the comets were going to come across, and just a couple of days before, he would start swinging with a long spear. If the populace didn't do so and so and so and so, why, the gods were going to throw a fiery ball of fire across that heaven. The populace would say, well, the devil with you, and I would just preach and stuff, I would come on. All of a sudden, there's this comet. And say, we'll be good. And the priest would say, well, we'll have it disappear by 4 a.m. And there was basic astronomy and mathematics and so on, all involved. But it was a secret proceeding. It was held to a few people, a booth. listen to a Martin degree is the only pattern of widespread release of knowledge in all of this lineup. Since today we have a sort of a priesthood, but he talking in the very unreal of the place about quack psychologists and that sort of thing. And they call them witch doctors. Well, they're not as good as witch doctors, and they shouldn't be doing by themselves. But they say you should have certain this and that, and be licensed by the Lord High or something of the sort before you could even dare to look on a subject which isn't even true. And this is kind of an E plus ultra, so we couldn't dignify modern knowledge of this subject as a study. Until we came along, it was pretty much of a blank page. Buddhism was the only thing which gave widespread knowledge to the world, and Buddhism is probably basically responsible for the greater part of man's civilization and civilized ideas. And that upsurge of civilization, which took place in a rather barbaric and cruel Asia, did bring to Asia a very high level of culture. That's Japan, for instance, all of its printing, reading, writing, art, music, all of these things to Buddhism. Quite remarkable. Here was a group of people who made their understanding and knowledge free to all. They kept the communication lines open, and they pioneered around the world, and they taught men to come out of the trees and stop hanging by his tail and chopping up his fellows. Now, we actually are engaged, not perhaps in a comparable activity, but comparable magnitude, but we're engaged in an activity today which is a parallel of this. We find man busily fighting man. We find man being totally dominant on Earth at the expense of every other dynamic. We find man abusing the finest trusts and ideas and ethics in an effort to get ahead, to be a great nation, to be the richest man here and there, to be this and that. In other words, we find him engaged on games of a rather uncivilized nature. And it doesn't matter that he drives a very well-manufactured car. The car is more civilized than he is. Now, we've watched the decline of control. Control was something that was so badly done for so long that it at length came into disrepute. And yet, in the final analysis, this is civilization. Civilization is a cooperative action of control towards social objects and goals. It's cooperative control. In other words, we and me will abide by. We have this level of morals, not ethics, since those are native to the beast, but morals. And we have these laws, and we have these social usages, and so on. And we are willing to be directed by these things so that we can live in peace and harmony and have a good life. Now, that is civilization. And we have discovered here very recently almost the entirety of the mechanisms known as control. And to tell you about techniques, I have to tell you about all this other. An antisocial world is a world without control. A nation with a tremendous number of automobile accidents racked up every day is a nation which contains a great many people who cannot abide by the law. The people who can abide by the law would not have accidents in the first place, but the people who cannot abide by the law are not touched or regulated in any way by the law. They cannot receive directions. They are beyond control. And when we look at the vast panorama of man's activities today, we discover that he is more or less beyond control. He is possessed of weapons, mechanical contrivances, which make him more able to communicate and should make him more responsibility in all directions. But we find him, for instance, irresponsibly exploding atom bombs. Now, he is controlling, perhaps to some degree, atomic fission, but he is uncontrolled as a social unit. Well, if your neighbor insisted on throwing garbage out in front of your house every day, which would attract flies and breed disease and bring death to your family. I'm sure that you would consider that neighbor to some degree antisocial. A government which throws radiation all over its people irresponsibly is a government which comparably does not keep or take seriously its own pledges on the foreign front, as it has ceased to do, promises a country something in case it withdraws, and then immediately afterwards misclaims any responsibility, says it didn't do that. You have a government which is failing to control people and which is not controlled by people. Now, this government in the United States is a government which is supposed to be controlled by the people. If the people drop below the level of control, the government would get out of hand, and that is exactly what has happened today. The unpopularity of control today is such that we ourselves could do much worse than simply to establish little schools or groups that showed people how to control their fellow man. And if we had a little book or something and it said the handling and control of Homo sapiens, and we just took people who were forming executives and things and showed them how to control their fellows, and taught them that control was not necessarily bad, but it was merely an accurate calculation of effort.
Cycle on one thing,
on one person, and when you can do that well, you could, of course, handle many simultaneous actions. There are probably many mystic methods of controlling people, but the final analysis is you stop them from doing what they're doing, you start them doing something else, and you have one in between those two change. Now, if you have to let everybody just run on, and if you can't stop anybody from doing anything, you're never going to control anyone. Techniques, then, are all contingent upon your ability to start, change, and stop actions, motions, communication, thought on the part of your pre-clear. You don't sit there and run a technique. You sit there and start to change and stop a pre-clear on a technique. Now remember that. All techniques and all procedures become relatively valueless unless they are run with good control. We can tell you now the difference between a good auditor and a bad one. A bad auditor isn't an auditor at all. A man who goes off into figure-figure on his pre-clear is simply expressing his unwillingness to control the pre-clear. Therefore, the best techniques are the most direct techniques. The auditor sits there as a model of something that can control the pre-clear, and the pre-clear can use that model. And therefore, discover it is true that control can be done. And if control can be done, if it can be accomplished, then the pre-clear himself can accomplish it. Why? Because it is he that is being controlled. If that is all you did in a session, you would make somebody well. Why? Let me call your attention to what we call the service facsimile. Service facsimile is a very, very interesting mechanism, first written about, I think, toward the end of 1951, and handled rather definitely through 1952. It was a combination of illnesses which a person used or exerted in an effort to control his environment and fellow beings. As a service facsimile, it was a series of illnesses. Very interesting, because it is very easily established that a person is doing this. We had a technique one time, what would it do for you? You know, a fellow has a bum leg, so he said, well, now what's that leg going to do for you? He invariably stumbles out with relevance. So he wanted to keep me from chopping wood. Pity of it is, he's really no longer chopping wood, but the idea is that the individual had a series of illnesses or disabilities which he used to keep from becoming an effect of very positive control and to control others. The chronic somatics of the hypochondriac are quite interesting. He uses these against his people around him in an effort to control. He says, oh, I have to do ill today, and I cannot walk down to the corner, and therefore, please go down to the corner and get some chewing tobacco. That is the use of chronic somatic. It's used under Veterans Administration. War wounds very often become a chronic somatic. They become a way of life. They control the government. Just to that degree, an individual is disabled. There's nothing wrong with having a chronic somatic. It is simply a subordinate, low-level, not very workable, but widely and intensely used method of controlling one's fellows. And that was the service facsimile of 1951. And here in 1957, we have the answer to it. What was the man short of? He was no longer capable of controlling people, so he dropped into a service facsimile to explain why. And then to use the service facsimile to supplement his abilities to control. Therefore, if you rehabilitate a person's ability to control himself and others, you will rather automatically discharge the service facsimile. Of what did his service facsimile consist? It was the chronic somatics which he exhibits continually. Very some use for every illness he has. He can take one illness away from him, he'll get another, unless his control ability and ability to control are rehabilitated. When these two things are rehabilitated, he, of course, will abandon any use of the service vaccinally. So how do you cure this angel brain cracker? If you want to make a man hate you, make him well. The way to do that is with control. Therefore, control is subordinate to every other technique. The underlying, I said subordinate, it actually is the dominant, but it underlies every technique that you administer. And if you cannot administer oddity with positive control, and if you cannot live with positive control, then prepare to be unhappy. Your prisoners will not get well, and your fellow human beings will not be very comfortable in your presence. People have blown control up to the idea of some dictator sitting on a mountain with his arms crossed, and sending everybody to the galleys. This is not control, as we understand it. This is megalomania and the worst control imaginable. It's automatically bad control if it never made anybody well, and I don't think you'd ever accuse Hitler of ever making anybody well. He made Europe sicker than it's ever been. Well, that's... He wasn't then exerting control. He wasn't exerting a positive start, change, and stop. Matter of fact, he himself was totally out of control. He went into fits, roarings, ravenings. And this man brought about the death of 30 million human beings. That's a very conservative estimate. He knocked out that many story characters for me. I mean, I didn't write for years. Now, this man, then, is the thing people fear when they think of control. Now, that isn't control. So evidently, what control is becomes your most valuable knowledge. What is it? Before an auditor could administer a technique, then, he should know how to administer it, which is with very, very good control. If he did that, then almost any technique would work one way or the other. You understand the importance of this. We're not groping in the dark now. This has been beaten to pieces and under test. This is one of the most exhaustively examined subjects we have to hand. It has been under inspection for 6 years. What is this thing? Well, it's a lot of things. But it's a positive, communicated, start, change, and stop. And the moment that you say it's a positive, communicated, start, change, and stop, you realize that the method of communication must be communication. And communication does not exist in the presence of low misemotions. So it's not enough to start, change, and stop somebody by intention. You have to communicate that. And unless you communicate it to the person, the being, the Satan, you have not communicated it. And if you have not communicated it and made him a participant in it, then you haven't controlled anything or anybody. Now, the control of a mechanical object is very simple. Very, very simple. If you want to stop the thing, you have to stop it against all costs. You still can stop it. By wrecking it, but that isn't controlling it. So controlling has the connotation of preservation. Good control preserves or causes to survive that which is being controlled. You've got a good motor mac, motor machinist working on an engine. You will find out that he starts it and he stops it. He changes its position. And somebody else comes along
a good motor Mac, and he can start, stop it, and change its position, and the motor just keeps on running, does well, doesn't break down. Now we find somebody comes along who is the public idol of control. You know, 1-5, screaming, bus editing up. Public doesn't know what control is. It's part of their lack of knowledge, which is what is wrong with them. They send that fellow in, up against that machine, and he stops it all right. He shoves the spanner into one of its flywheels, and it stops. He can stop it. He can bust up the fuel line. He can mess up the plugs, and he can mess up the valves. He can stop it all right. But control consists of start, change, and stop. That person then is not really controlling the machine, since if he stops it, he cannot thereafter start it. So you see what role preservation plays in control. You're controlling something. The stopping of it must admit that it's being started again. The starting of it must admit it's being changed in location, or something of being changed in location, so that it does run. And the stopping of it must not include a prevention of all further starts or changes. Do you understand that? So the bad control of a child would be to simply stop the child, stop the child, stop the child, stop the child, stop the child. If you don't do that, I'm going to beat you. That is the way we start the child. Why? Because we have to include part of the last stop. We stopped him with duress, therefore we must start him with duress. After a while, does he start? No, he doesn't. We find him in our institutions, in our jails, in our homes. And there he is. He's somebody who's out of control. Why is he out of control? He stopped. It's up to us to start him again. Well, we can. That's the miracle of it. Therefore, good control, by its own definition, contains start and change, as well as stop. And the public at large is educated to believe that control means stop. So we have all the police forces I have any acquaintance with in this era doing nothing but stop. It occurs to them that they have to get automobiles off the street, that they have to get traffic through narrow places in the highway. Wherever you see a cop, you see the traffic stacked up. Quite interesting. They run stop. As I told you about the cop who got out, his windshield was muddy, everything was muddy, the car all splattered up, he's given some fun. He got out, and I thought, well, the man's going to clean his windshield, isn't that nice? No, he didn't. He went around and wiped off his stoplights, got back in the car, and drove off. True observation. Total fixation. Now that man is so far gone in the control of the public at large, and crime in particular, that he can no longer hope to do anything but stop it with ruin and wreckage. How do you stop a criminal? Well, you kill him, you put him in jail, you do this, you do that, and so on. Never occurs to anybody the definition of a criminal is one who is not under control. That is a criminal. A criminal is somebody who's not under control. He's not even vaguely under control, by the way, if you've ever had anything to do with him. What's given us this silly picture is all the villains we used to see in the movie serials. They always had such well-controlled gangs of men who were always much more expert and better fighters than the hero. We have a very odd notion of this sort of thing. Those things don't exist in real life. A bunch of criminals plan a bank robbery. They say, Joe, you're supposed to be over there in that corner, and when we come out of the bank, why, you have the engine running, and away we go, and they come out of the bank, and Joe is having a drink up the street at the bar. You know, they have trouble in crime. I mean, they place criminals few places, and then they can't keep them there. And they say, you go on up to Chicago, and the guy is found in town 3 days later, and he's picked up by the cops and questioned. The reason he was supposed to have left for Chicago. these positively controlled gangs do not and never do exist. But control is your definition. Now, the definition of insanity is an inability to start, change, or stop anything. When a person can't start, change, or stop anything, he's in terrible, terrible, terrible condition. Keeping that in mind, and evaluating by it any technique you receive from there on, this would be a modern intensive. Hello, Preacher. We presume you have a place to audit. We presume that you will have a person to audit. The first step of all auditing, of course, is finding the Preacher. You have to scrape him up from somewhere. When you do that too seldom, you wind up self-auditing. It's very peculiar. Self-auditing is merely a scarcity of Preachers. Now, you got the Preacher there, and you talk to him about auditing and the arrangements and when he's supposed to be on deck, and you get this cleared out, but that's all administrative sort of chitter-chatter. We went down to auditing, and the first question we would ask him is not, put up your right hand and follow the action of my right hand or something like that. That wouldn't say. We're talking about an intensive now. I wouldn't really start a session seriously without bringing this one in. Anything happened to you lately? What's going on in your life? It's almost a social gambit. It's the most natural thing in the world to be interested in your Preacher. You let him talk too much, and you let his having this out the bottom. Remember that, because this is a critical time of the session. The first moment of the first session is critical. You may, as is, with communication, so much having that you shoot it out the bottom so you can do anything about it at all. You can watch a man sink with too much talk. So this social response and gambit is only apparent. We're being about as social. Just about as social as a bear. Because you're going to clobber him into silence the moment that you get the information. And the information you want is, have you got a present time problem? But he won't identify it if you ask him that way. You want to know what's been happening lately? Anything that's been worrying him? You don't want to know anything that's been worrying 5 years ago, but you know, just the last few days, is he undergoing any particular stress at this time? You're not going to let him talk very much. But you're going to be at ease and social about it. You understand? You let him ramble on for 7, 8, 10 consecutive minutes of yipper-yap, giving you no information at all, and your Preacher is out of control, which he is, of course, and you are going to get nowhere, and you've started him on the downward spiral of lost pattiness and all the rest of it. So your adroitness is at once invited into finding out if he has a present-time problem that you have to de-intensify in order to get him into the auditing room. The man who ducks into the room being chased by police in mid-stride is not very auditable. He keeps looking at the door, expecting the cops to jump in. Now, that goal of discovering the existence of the present-time problems thereby accomplished, and the auditing command, can you think of a circumstance or situation as important as that one? To a Scientologist, you'd say, well, give me a problem comparable to magnitude. Now, you're asking to think of one. And he's going to search the backtrack, but let me assure you, he's seldom in a position to be able to invent or dream up one or understand why you want him to imagine one. He won't understand that, so you'll ask him to think of one. And one of the ways of steering him is to get most enthusiastic about those he has obviously dreamed up. And don't get enthusiastic at all about what he says. Well, 5 years ago, my brother was in a similar circumstance. You say, yes, yes, your brother. We're auditing you, not your brother. Now, can you think of one? Can you think of a situation as important as the one you just told me about? Well, if you can chop your Preacher off, you can steer a Preacher most
fantastically.
Want to. And you're just running some common magnitude on him.
After he's done this a few times, you can get into the subject of inventing.
Seems to be done very smoothly with a new green preclear.
He said, well, I could just do more help. And you say, well, that's all right, okay.
All right, just for your sake, I'll let you invent one.
Can't think of any others,
so you can invent one. You've got them going now, invent another one. Got that? Don't waste any time explaining technique, Scientology, what you're doing. Don't try to educate him in any degree. The only thing you're trying to do is de-intensify a circumstance that will detract from the auditing session. And flatten it so that you're satisfied it's flat. Now, when is the present time problem flat? When he doesn't care whether he does anything about it or not. Don't think it's flat when he's not willing to do something about it. I've had people do that and hang up in an intensive. I've seen auditors hang up through clear right straight up in an intensive just for a long, long time. 2 or 3 weeks of auditing, hung up. Brinkley said, well, you know, I think I could go back and tell my husband that it's all right if he goes away with the other woman. And you know, I'd sit back and say, well, I guess I've done it now. I've at least got it up to a point where you can do that. Now let's put on with some auditing. And the 2 weeks more of auditing and absolutely nothing happened. Why? He put on a dullness band on the subject. He was still in the problem. Now, sometimes he's so apathetic, he moves upscale into it. How long can he run? Give me a problem of comparable magnitude with whatever auditing demand you use without completely ruining the preclear. Oh, I don't know. It's been tested up to about 150 hours. It's a long time to know. He's simply chewing on one command, isn't it? But it's been done. And it didn't knock his head in the south. It didn't do it. The phenomenon you're looking for there is to get the problem to extend itself from the preclear and be less in the environment and more where it belongs. There aren't any better ones that we've dreamed up because a lot of them have occurred, but they become subordinate to this one as time went on. It's almost enough to find something which will supplant a problem of comparable magnitude to know that next week you'll find there's something wrong with it and be back on a problem of comparable magnitude. I think it's just one of these things. Because it's happened time after time. Somebody comes up and says, well, this is the better way to solve this one, better way to go at this one, better way to handle this one, so on. Now, the one with the problem of comparable magnitude includes the auditing command as follows. How could that be a problem to live? With the little of a stab there that you can shove in occasionally, you can just jab him a little bit with, well, can you get yourself figuring on it? You got that? Otherwise, these guys will do nothing but sit off and run a whole catalog of similarities. He, by the way, at long length, without your jabbing, will eventually give you, first, a circumstance, and then a condition about it, and then eventually give you a problem. But you're not going to sit around and wait that long because this is just a preliminary. All right, having dispensed with this now, you can actually make a preacher quite ill, by the way, by throwing into hand contact mimicry when he's very, very frantically worried about an immediate problem in present time. This does not follow with psychotic patients, by the way. They're always worried about something in present time, which problems are unruly, and you just go chasing all over hell's half acre and you couldn't talk to them anyhow. Late audit psychotic is on the first actual auditing step, which is control processes. Now, we don't care what they are. They're just simple, complete, nothing but control processes. Now, one of those is hand contact mimicry. He's controlling the motion of his hand, beginning to contribute to the motion a little bit. You're controlling him. You're controlling him on a communication line. Something that you would run on somebody who's having a really rough time would be give me your hand, and you pick the hand up and put it in your other hand. Say thank you. Good communication. Give me your hand. Pick your hand up and put it in your hand and say thank you. That's a sort of a hand contact mimicry all by itself. Look, I'm a psycho or catatonic, maybe.
Any control process having to do with the positive start, change, and stop of the pre-clear's person. No thought process goes in. It is all manual, walkabout, move, touch, handle, ball, your vagrant. That's all physical contact, the whole kit and caboodle there. Those physical contact processes, just as themselves, for no other reason at all. Now, included in that is a very elementary and earliest form of HC. But done with a level of control you never would have dreamed of before you studied British Mitten. Get wall? All right. Walk over to it. Touch it. There you go. Oh, but he's not to walk too fast. And oh, he's not to walk too slow. And now he's not going to put his hand on it very diffidently. And now he's going to keep his face turned toward it as long as you want it turned toward it. And he knows the fellow is liable to tell you sometime, this is the joke, he's liable to tell you sometime, this is like being in the army. At that time, I would allow myself a quiet laugh. The army never insisted on control like this. They have never dreamed of control at this level. Down and stop and march and sound off and squats east and west and that sort of thing. They don't have any sergeant there moving their legs. Now, the PI recently, some sergeant touched a Marine, I think. Used his fist, but he touched a Marine, they court martial him. Interesting. Immediately, the Marine Corps was up in arms against the people who court martial that sergeant. And they'll never hear the last of it. The Marines know that there's a certain amount of push around necessary to control if they could control organization. But because of their misnomer, they do not do good control. They do the best that is being done at this time, but that's not very good. You just jack up your sights on how much control you can put into HC, and you've got it. Hand contact military is excellent. Because a person does not have to see a tunnel, he only has to see the connecting line. But whatever you do, use a heavy positive control at that level with no further significance, then you will have it in the bag. Now, if you want to get more significant about it, then you had better. That would be practically annotating. Everything will be going on moving to him. You want an HC to keep it from going away. Now, this is comparable to connectedness on the body. And there's a better process than connectedness itself, but connectedness belongs right in that same banner line. HC keep it from going away in the body in the man's eye. Auditor selects the object, the auditor says, you see that chair, and the auditor says, good, walk over to it. And then the auditor gets there, the preclear gets there, the auditor says, take hold of it, and perhaps with persuasion, the preclear takes hold of it, and then the auditor says, keep it from going away. And when the preclear has, the auditor says, fine, and we don't care whether the auditor says, let go of it or not. We understand that. We don't care whether the auditor says, let go of it or not, because the auditor's demand was, take hold of it and keep it from going away. But we really don't care to punch up break of communication. Actually, the acknowledgement, fine, breaks the communication very gently. You understand that? I'm not telling you to omit acknowledgement. I'm really saying that is an omittable command. You wouldn't say, keep it from going away. Sometimes you have to say, have you? That was the idea after a while, you don't have to do that yet. And he says, yes. And you say, all right, let go of it. Well, you can do that. You don't have to do that. Because your acknowledgement tells you to let go of it. Do you understand? And when you tell him directly to let go of things, you actually are running a little bit of communication break.
Radio communication enters in on it with a fine line.
So does nobody care whether you do this or don't do it, you understand?
We just don't care which one you do.
We tell him, let go of it.
Go on. That's fine. Tell him he can let go of it. Now, I have run it with a slight variation between these two things. All right, take hold of the chair. All right, now keep it from going away. And then, when he has, I pick his hands up off of it and put them back at his sides when I thank him. I say, thank you, and I pick his hands off the chair. In other words, I don't tell him to let go. I just unlatch him. I do that just as an excuse to unlatch him, just to put him under a little bit further control. I do something to him that I didn't tell him to do. That's about as far as you can go with that kind of thing. It's just a variation. AC, these are both, that's a walkabout, this is a walkabout process. AC, hold it still. You see that? Walk over to it. Visio on a little bit, and you may have some peculiar adventures in doing this. You go put down and sweat on a little bit is good for you. Turning on somebody's mock-ups and making them life-size and so on. It takes a gradient scale. An auditor sometimes has to be smarter than a wit. And for me, give you a series of auditing commands that overcome all the people's objections whenever raised. This whole subject would be an impossibility unless he was going to publish a dictionary or something that size. Well, it's very simple action. I give you the solution to it. Mock up invisibilities, but more importantly, mock up black masses and shove them in. Mock up black masses and shove them away. That's the clue. Now you tell them to mock up something, and they say, well, I can't. This way, it's that way, it's very tiny, it's something of the sort. Well, you've got to mock up the remedy, smart adding this, or you've got to, on a gradient scale, see if you can't make one just a little bit bigger, and a little bit bigger. And when you can't things go away easily, and you sometimes can have mock up an elephant and have the elephant walk away, and all kinds of peculiarities here are very evident. There's a lot of trickery involved in that particular process, by the way. Smooth auditing. Don't give the preacher a sudden jump. Don't give him an impossible. Give him something he can do that just a little bit strains his ability to do. You lead him all the way. Now you want him to mock up something that encourages the ability to make things subjectively a little more solid. Now that's quite important. You have him mock up old man, make him a little more solid. Mock up something or other, make it a little more solid. Mock up enough time so that it itself doesn't hang something up on the track. You best possibly choose some non-significant object. There's a great deal of choice involved here. A non-significant object is, a chair to a person who was electrocuted a life or so ago is not a non-significant object. The wall of a fellow who's been in jail quite a bit is not a non-significant object. So you have them mock up something which they consider relatively innocuous. And make it a little more solid. All this demands a little bit of communication with the preacher. You never want to go out of communication with the preacher. You want to keep talking to him one way or the other. Treat them kindly. And you now adequately established making the room solid when you ran AC, make it a little more solid, you see. And now we've overhauled the bank so that the bank is in condition. So it can be made a little bit more solid, and we ask them to get a facsimile, make it a little more solid, locate present time, make it a little more solid. Now, a lot of the demands which are used consist of a goal. You want to get him into non-painful areas if you possibly can manage it. You don't want him to get pictures of operating rooms. People have had a hard time and I had to turn his mock-ups on and that sort of thing. Boy, would I be suspicious every time he got a picture. I would say, get a picture, and the fellow would say, yes, I have one. And I would say, now, what is it a picture of? He'd say, well, it's the operating room. And I'd say, well, can you get another picture? I am the dog here. All right. Make it a little more solid. In other words, I would reject pictures which, if made a little more solid, would land him up in a stuck position on the track. You see that? It's not terribly important. Some of you can get pictures rather easily. You never have to worry about it twice. So they land in an operating room, make it a little more solid, say, what? Anyway, that's not very important. The little person who steps easily, as witnessed by the fact that the fellow's bank was totally black, miserable, stuck, so forth, non-present time circumstance, why, you've got a bit of care there. So a lot of the demand is, get a facsimile, make it a little more solid. Locate the room, your surroundings, the auditing session, whatever is needed there to identify it for the future, different things do. Sometimes you never have to identify it at all. You just say, all right, look around here. It's very simple. Some people are so mixed up that you have to designate, you have to say, look around the oddity environment. Now they get a little more solid. They say, yeah. Didn't hear you said that. They were stuck way on down the track someplace, and the past is the present, is the future. And if you don't differentiate clearly on bringing them back to present time, they follow up. They get very badly messed up. You understand that? So this again is a matter of opinion. The essence of the thing is you want to get a picture of the past, have them disposing of it or not, as the case may be. Get a picture of the present. They make each a little more solid. In other words, you want to get a picture of the past, make it a little more solid. This picture, which we call present time, make it a little more solid. Picture of the past, make it a little more solid. Picture of the present, make it a little more solid. And if we're being suspicious of the preacher, if he's going to get snarled up rather easily, then we're going to steal him on those pictures of the past so that he doesn't wind up in odd and peculiar places. But if he is that bad off that we have to be terribly, terribly careful, we'd be far better off just to run the first few steps I gave you, the control processes, review the present time problem, do some hand contact mimicry, run some 8C, keep it from going away, 8C, hold it still, 8C, make it a little more solid, and then get him up and find out if his subjective having his characteristics evolve, and we might then be able to run that amount solid. So in other words, we can run these early steps over and over and over and over without ever getting into that amount solids, and still win all the way. Maybe we can win when we slow fade. Now, even if you do run then and now solids and get away with it, it's better, rather than to grind forever on then and now solids, to run the whole early cycle again. So it doesn't seem to be making much progress on then and now solids all of a sudden. He was doing all right, but it seems to have flattened up a little bit. Well, don't think it is flat. Then and now solids, time of flattening. When a person can make as solid as present time any sector of the past track at will, or mock up as solid as it will be any sector of the future track, then we would say there's a flat process. That's, therefore, you will get somebody up and it'll sort of hang fire and it won't be progressing, won't be doing well. You know, it's kind of temporary and flat. Well, we're hung up on control. We're hung up on keep it from going away. We're hung up on it, hold it still. We're hung up on make it a little more solid. And I don't care how you do those earlier steps, the best way to do them, as it has been worked out, has been simply just as I've given them to. So you run that amount solid for a while, it seemed to be flat. You run that for maybe 5, 10, 20 hours. 20 hours, I'd say, a little long, but we were absolutely outside. And then we would go back through that whole scale again. Actually, if I was doing it, I'd probably run through the whole scale at least every 5 hours. Now keep it running. Keep it changing. You find out his abilities were shifting all the time and coming up scale, up scale, up scale, up scale. Well, how about finger processes? Where does ought to be fit? Should be? Things like that. That is comparable to change of SCS and can always unsettle a case. You can run 8C ought to be about 5 commands and change the case all over the place and run it 8 and you spend the rest of the session patching up the preclear. In other words, you can run too much change on a case. Now get that, as powerful as it is. You run too much change process. If you ran too much ought to be on a case, you could get this when you look around and find something exactly, find something that you're willing to have exactly as it is. Oh, that's the murder. Blows green charges, does all sorts of things. Runs on an obsessive pace and so forth. It's tiny, tiny amount of gains condition, but hardly enough to keep it running very long. Interesting little process, however. Now, ought to be, therefore, is a bit off the groove, could change the case, could change his ideas of solids, and has done so rather rapidly. 6 commands of this has changed a person's rather bad off on the subject of solids,
Changed his idea of solids all over the place. Tiens, moi, walk over to him. All right, touch it. Now tell me how it ought to be. That run on six sequences gave the fellow a solid wall when he was run back on the other things. In other words, it's a punch. But it's just like running C. When the fellow hangs up on stop, you can always get him off stop by letting change on SCS. Where does SCS fit? Oh, it fits in there in control process ranges. SCS is not quite as good on low-scale cases because it isn't quite extensional enough. In other words, the person's too introverted into his own body, so it runs on a higher-scale case. Now, there are cases, there are techniques higher than this, which are mock-up techniques, but we won't have very many cases that we do this sort of thing, and we'll pick that up another day. Thank you.